Thanks, everybody. My name is Maren Harwood, grateful recovered alcoholic. Great to be here again. Thank you for allowing me to come back for week two. It doesn't happen often. That's a joke. Anyway, last week we went over a couple of things, and we'll reiterate those. Just briefly, I kind of want to, like I did last week, qualify myself as a real alcoholic. Just like the book describes, in very much the same way. Every time I put one in my system, I didn't know how many I was going to take, and every time I tried to stop on my own, I couldn't. Real alcoholic, right? So I could tell you for the 13 years I was in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous without a solution, untreated, I could tell you and say out loud when I shared at a meeting that I was alcoholic. I didn't know what that really meant. I thought I had a problem with alcohol. Interesting concept, right? So that would just simply mean that if I could put the alcohol down, I'd be okay. Turns out, I didn't realize what the number one cause of relapse is. Sobriety. Every time I relapsed, I did it sober. My sober mind is a liability. It's a problem. It tells me that drinking is a good idea, therefore I did it again. Right? That's the issue. Alcohol's not going anywhere. It's not. Right, it's wherever, it's down the street, it's at our restaurants, it's at people's houses, it's not going anywhere. My mindset towards it is what has to change. My thought process has to change. If my mind doesn't change, I will drink again. End of story. I know we like to sugarcoat it in AA. Hey, you know, just relax a little bit, make a 90 and 90, you'll be okay. That's a lie. People in Alcoholics Anonymous will drink again without a sufficient change in mindset and a spiritual solution to their answer, which is a spiritual problem called wine and spirits, the spirit of alcohol. We have a spiritual problem and we have a spiritual solution. Anything outside of that just muddies the waters. It might work for a little bit, right? Maybe you find the right partner or spouse. That might work for a little bit. You might get the right job. That might work for a little bit. You get a prognosis from a doctor that's not great. That might work for a little bit. Right? Bill talks about it in his story. He says, fear sobered me for a bit. And then came the insidious insanity behind the first drink. The thought is the problem. If we're going to try to fight the thinking about alcohol with the same mind that we had going into our local detox, we're in big trouble. Big, big trouble. So the issue, right, as the doctor's opinion puts it, I'm restless, irritable, and discontented until I can feel the effects of ease and comfort that come at once by taking a couple drinks. That's what we're really after. Ease and comfort. The question is always, where am I getting my ease and comfort? I ask my sponsees that every time I talk to them. Where did you get your ease and comfort today? Right? Was it at work? Was it the zeros in the bank account? Was it the spouse? Was it whatever? Right? Anything outside of that? Like, let's talk spirituality. Like, where's God involved in all this? Right? I'm sober today by the grace of God and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's it. It's not anything I did. I somehow stumbled around and stayed alive long enough to be hit with the spiritual frying pan. That's it. I cannot take credit, and I will never take credit for, quote-unquote, my sobriety date. God gifted that to me, and that was it. December 27, 2014, God saw fit to remove my obsession for alcohol and its derivatives. We'll just leave it at that. I respect AA enough to just call it that. Right? God saw fit to remove the obsession. Since then, there has not been, in between my ears, a thought or obsession to use alcohol or its derivatives. Is there thoughts to be selfish? Oh yeah, right. I've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I still haven't recovered from me yet. I still think about me quite often, right? Selfish and self-centered, the book says that, we think is the root of our troubles, right? That's my issue. And then once I get restless, irritable, discontented, I need ease and comfort. Where's that coming from, right? So if the sober mind is the problem, we need to change the sober mind. Right, so Alcoholics Anonymous alone is a beautiful thing. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Sitting in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting is not sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. I hate to say it that way. It's like going to the dentist and waiting in the waiting room and your molar's all blown out and thinking that you're going to get better. You need to take action and go see the damn dentist. Right? I can't just show up here and think I'm going to be okay. If that's the case, then great. There are some people in our fellowship, God bless them. I love them to death. They come to AA and they say, I don't got to do any of those steps. I just make a meeting a day and I don't drink. And God bless you. That's amazing. Incredible. Not a real alcoholic. Not built like me. They don't need the solution that I need. And that's okay. The problem becomes when they try to sponsor an alcoholic like me, right? And then they tell me what they needed to get better, right? What they needed was a lot less work than what I needed, okay? So that's the difference. We need to make sure we know what a real alcoholic is. Once we know what a real alcoholic is, which we'll probably cover that in one of these weeks coming up, page 44, paragraph 1, it tells you exactly what the real alcoholic is, right? In a little chapter called We Agnostics. Interesting chapter. But first, since we have somebody that's somewhat new, I think I'd be remiss if we didn't jump into page 24 of the book and start reading a little bit in there. There's a paragraph that has important squiggly letters. Smart people call it italics. And the interesting part about this is I'm an AA history nerd, and I will not bore you with any of that. But the reason that they used italics was because bold print would have been too expensive to print the book. So italics was a little more expensive than the regular print, but not too much more expensive than the regular print. Okay, so top of page 24, first full paragraph. This is in a chapter called There is a Solution. There is a solution. The title to the chapter is a promise. Right? Think about, I don't know how many times I've gone to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and not heard any bit of hope from anyone speaking from the floor. Just the title of this chapter gives you enough hope, right? If you're new, there's a solution. I come in here thinking there's a massive problem, right? And then and you're going to be fighting and struggling it the rest of your life. You ever hear somebody say that? Oh, you're one day at a time. You're just going to struggle through it. Like, man, I'd rather do it at a bar stool. At least then I'd have a sense of ease and comfort. I'm going to come into AA and be told that I'm going to struggle forever. Like, no thanks. Not necessarily interested in that. What I am interested in is a solution. That sounds good to me. That I like. Right? What do I got to do to get there? All right, sit down, little buckaroo. Let's go over a couple things. Right? That's all it's really about. But I've got to understand this paragraph. If there's anyone new or we have a hard time conveying this paragraph to the newcomer, it's going to be difficult for them to kind of understand what it is we're really up against. Okay, so this paragraph outlines the problem. Okay. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into the consciousness with sufficient force the memory and suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. Let's break that down, right? Reasons yet obscure. We've lost the power of choice in drink. That doesn't say to drink. It says in drink. Therefore, anyone that can wake up in the morning and choose not to drink, I don't care how many 24s you've been sober, right? You might not be one of us. I've lost the power to choose whether I drink or not, right? That's the case. That's what the book tells me right here on 24, right? Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. Practically is a funny word in there. It doesn't say it's non-existent. It's practically non-existent. My so-called willpower is about 2 weeks. Right? Some people are a little bit longer. Some people can white-knuckle it for years. God bless them. That sounds horrible. Right? But for me, like, I'm about 2 weeks where I'll grip my chair just long enough and I'll become homicidal and suicidal and I'll need a solution. I'm restless, irritable, discontented. Where's my ease and comfort? Well, I'll try, sports betting apps, right? Or I'll try lustful thoughts or actions or whatever. I'll try comfort foods, right? I'll try 20 energy drinks a day. I'll try working 70 hours a week. I'll try going to the gym for 5 hours a day. Like, I'll try all that stuff, and none of it becomes sufficient and gives me the ease and comfort that I'm looking for. Then all of a sudden, well, you know what you got ease and comfort from last time? Bottle of alcohol, right? That's what my mind tells me. Well, drink won't hurt you. just one. You've been sober like 4 days. You know what I mean? Like, that's what my brain will tell me. And we are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memories of suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. Right? So we're to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force. That's the important part. Like, I might remember my last drunk, but that is not sufficient force enough to have me, to stop me from doing another one. Right? That's what it's telling me. I will remember it. And even if they're suffering humiliation, getting locked up, losing my kids, losing my job, losing my car, whatever it might be, I might have those things in mind, but by itself is not sufficient. It's not sufficient to stop us from drinking again. And here is the operative term, the last sentence. We are without defense against the first drink. So that means, as built, equipped from the factory, quote unquote, I don't have the effective defense against the first drink. Right? And what we do a lot of times, and I know there's no one ill-meaning by this, right? But there are people that will sit in Alcoholics Anonymous and tell a newcomer to keep coming back. Keep coming back, little buddy. You're going to be just fine. We'll love you till you love yourself. Like, none of that's true. If I could just keep coming back, right? If I could do that, that would imply that I have power over the first drink. That would imply the first step doesn't apply to me. If I'm powerless, over alcohol. I'm without defense against that first drink. And just to simply tell me to keep coming back is lazy. It's saying, oh, you know what, if they don't come back, they didn't want it bad enough. They're already here. They want it. You think everyone just like wakes up in the morning and goes, you know what, AA sounds good. Like, no. They're here because the pain is bad enough. They want to sit with a corny big book thumper like me, even if it's accidentally. Right? Even if they just have to get their sheet signed. They're here in front of us right now. I've been in sales for a long time. Built a career out of selling, right? And when people come to where we sell that product, they got up in the morning and decided, right, to go buy that product. They didn't accidentally stumble into where we're selling those products. They decided to do so. The same with AA. That's enough commitment for me that they're interested in what we have to offer. Are we clearly articulating to the newcomer what we offer? That's the question. What is it are we really offering? Is it a cup of coffee? Is it a handshake? A hello? You know, welcome? Great. Like, what are we really... Oh, if you're really serious about this, you'll call me every single day. Be like, where's that in the book? Where is it? I haven't found it yet. I've studied this for 8+ years. Every sentence over and over and over again. And nowhere in there does it say you have to make 90 meetings in 90 days. Nowhere in there does it say the words that you have to call your quote-unquote sponsor every day. In fact, it doesn't even say the word sponsor in here. Right? Am I against sponsorship? No. Love sponsorship. Without sponsorship, I'm not here. Right? My sponsor told me to read the doctor's opinion when I went into detox the last time with anyone that'll have me, that'll listen, or is at least coherent enough to sit up straight and listen. Right? So my sponsor gave me sound advice going into detox, right? And then coming out, he picked me up the day I got out, right? And we discussed the first three proposals, as the book says, or the first three steps on the way to his house. He asked me if I had a problem with God, and I said, I don't know. He said, good answer. Nobody knows. That's what agnostic means, by the way. Agnostic is a Latin term. Ag means without, gnostic means knowledge. So someone is agnostic, has no knowledge whether they're actually... I could sit here and probably do a pretty convincing testimony that God exists, but I can't prove it to you. Just the same as an atheist can come up to me and give me some pretty darn good, and they could maybe give a good dissertation on why God doesn't exist, but they can't prove it. We're all agnostic. How about that for leveling the playing field? Right? That's why I believe this book was divinely inspired. Bill didn't say we atheists... He said, we agnostics, for a very specific reason. So on the way, he said, you have a problem with God? I don't know. Good answer. Got to his place, slid me a notebook across the table. I'm like, at this point, 22 or 23 days sober. Slid a notebook across the table and said, write a list of all the people you're angry at. No problem. I said, you're on it. So I wrote the list. I wrote, that's exactly what he did. He laughed. He's like, yeah, I'll probably be on it for a while. Maybe forever. Wrote the list. Wrote the reasons why I was angry. You see what he's tricking me into? That's an inventory. That's a resentment inventory. Right? Resentment. Another Latin word. Right? Resentment. It comes from the word sentar, which means to feel. Resentment means to re-feel the same emotion over and over and over again, whether it's real or imagined. That's the imagined part. It's the funny part, right? I think I know everything and what people are thinking and what they're going to say. You don't have to admit this if you don't want to. I'm going to admit it for the interest of the group. All right? Have you ever sat and thought about having a conversation with someone, had the conversation in your head, and then not had the conversation because you know how it's going to go? Let the record show there are a few people actually admitting it. And I will admit this. I have done this more recently than I care to admit. That is lunacy. If you think you know what other people are thinking and what they're going to say, right? You're playing God again. And that's what the book warns against. Playing God. We had to quit playing God. It didn't work. You can easily see why. That's what the book says. We can easily see why. Oh, I'm not going to make amends to so-and-so because they're going to say this, and then I'm going to say this, and then this is whoa, back up there. Remember, the brain's the problem. Thinking's the problem. We need to change our mindset. My sober thought process is a liability, if you think about it that way. Right? So without a change in thought, we're not going to be able to do much about it when it comes to the problem of alcohol. So the next paragraph. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind and deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There we go. There's my issue. I see other people, right, taking a drink with impunity, and my thought is like, man, I could do that, right? So if you think about this, I come in here thinking I have a drinking problem. Turns out I have a thinking problem, right? So I think that I can do what other people can clearly do, right? Except when it's obvious to me. I'm blessed enough to be married to an absolutely wonderful woman, and we've had 3 kids together, and she is an absolute saint, right? An Al-Anoner all the way through. She hits me with some Al-Anon stuff. It makes my head spin in a circle. But anyway, I digress. But for something like this, right, it's like, I think, because we've had the 3 children, it's the same thing as me thinking that I know what it's like to be pregnant. I know what's going on here, right? That I don't know what's going on in other people's mind in them at all, right? But when I bring up like, oh, I know what it's like when my wife is pregnant, like I don't have any clue, and yet for some reason I still think that I know what other people are thinking. Or I know what it's like to be so-and-so, or I wish I had what they had, or I wish I thought the way that they thought, or I look at their life on Facebook and like, oh, they must be doing great. Like, it's all up here. The problem resides in the mind. The problem with, quote-unquote, everything. Right? Literally, my perception is what screws up my entire day. On whatever it might be. The boss tells me something I perceive as negative. Why would he do something like that? Because he cares for his business. Not because he doesn't like me. And yet my first thought is like, oh man, I'm getting fired. Here we go. Wonder how much... let me look up New Jersey unemployment. What is that like? And I didn't even put myself and say like, well, he must care about his business. He must care about what he's doing. He must care about his livelihood or all the money he's sunk into this place. He wants it to go well. I get that now. Does that happen every time? No. Right? I get cut off in traffic. My first thought is I give him the New Jersey salute. Right? Right? And I'm like, why am I angry? Because I think my time's more important than theirs. Maybe they've got someone who needs to get home to get their insulin shot. Maybe there's a medication they need to get to. Maybe they're rushing to the hospital because they're meeting a family member there. Who knows? Do I know? No. My first thought is, you spite me. That's my first thought. Right? It's funny how it's interesting. They tell us to like think. Have you ever heard anyone say this in a meeting? Think it all the way through. The drink. Play the tape all the way through. You ever hear them say that? We just blew that up with what we just read in this paragraph. That's a lie. If you could play the tape all the way through, why would you need any of this? Why would you? You wouldn't. You would either be non-alcoholic or you'd have some sort of... You'd be able to be like, oh yeah, my last drunk. Like, let me remember that. Oh yeah, I got blackout drunk and crashed my car. I guess I'll never drink again. Okay, then you're not built like me. If you can make that choice. If you have power of choice. Right? I'm not like that. I'm not built that way. Right? So if we can relate to any of that, we gotta dial back on some of these one-liner slogans that don't jive with the book. Right? If we could do that, then we can give a real accurate presentation of what AA really is and not what it isn't. If I could just have one-liner a day and I could quote-unquote stay sober for 24 hours, that'd be great. I'd just have a little app. I'd play my one-liner and be like, okay, yep, just for today. Got it. Good. Everything's great, right? If that were the case, I wouldn't have to do any work. I wouldn't have to change my mindset. Nothing would really have to change. I'd just play my little one-liner. Or if I could just go to an hour-long AA meeting every day and be like, yeah, that's sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. If that was the case, everyone would be sober, whoever came to AA. Our success rate is 3 to 8%. Not 38. 3 to 8%. And our literature tells us what their success rates were in 1955. That was the last time they talked about success rates. There's probably a good reason for that. But anyway, I digress. In 1955, when they wrote the foreword to the second edition, they said 50% of people who tried this got sober forever. 50%! I said this last week. If this meeting had a 50% success rate, the line would be out the door. They'd be begging to get in here. There'd be fist fights in the parking lot to get into this meeting. You mean 50% of the people that come in, right? And even right after that, it tells us, well, and another 25% after a couple relapses. That was 1955 AA. Now, here's the arguments that come along with that. The grumblers will sit and say, well, there was less people and less meetings and this and that. And I get that. Yes. Let's say that you're right. Let's imagine that even if that 50% was chopped in half, 25%, that would be massive. If there was any group in the United States that had a 25% success rate in Alcoholics Anonymous, people would be clamoring to go there. They'd be looking up real estate. They would move there to get this, right? Which is what they're really after, is the sense of ease and comfort. So if that was the case, now, today, we're sitting at a low success rate. What's the difference? What did they really do or stress or harp upon, let's call it that, back in between 1939 after the book was printed in 1955? Guess what they harped on? The steps and God. They didn't ask how your day was. If you wanted to talk about that, there was plenty of time after the meeting to discuss that stuff, or before. They didn't go to a meeting and just check in. Hey, Dr. Bob, I'm just checking in, letting you know how I'm feeling. They would have shot that right down. Whoa. Are you only sober a couple days? All right, why don't you have a seat here? You know what? Okay, so you sold railway equipment? All right, great. Bob used to sell railway equipment. Bob, why don't you take him in the back and start going through the steps? Don't disturb the meeting anymore. Right? That's what they would do. Aren't you a carpenter? Oh, yeah, yeah. Hey, Joe in the back's a carpenter. Hey, Joe, come on up. Why don't you take this guy in the back? We'll start the steps. Like, whatever, any little kind of commonality. Like, why not? They were dying at a major clip. I mentioned this last week. Alcohol was a serious epidemic of the time. It changed the constitution of our country twice. The Constitution, the founding document of the United States, was changed by alcohol twice. Prohibition, 18th Amendment, and then the 21st Amendment when they decided that was a bad idea. Let's make it legal again. Right? It amended the founding document of the United States. Social, political, economic problem. Massive. Right? Sound like any other epidemics? Very similar to an epidemic of today. Right. The only the name on the bottle is different. Guess what? There's a solution. It's here. We hide it from the damn newcomer. Why are we hiding hope? Why are we hiding that? You could come into this room, have a spiritual experience that you've never had before, and never have a thought to drink or do whatever ever again.
Well, you don't want to tell the newcomer that.
Why not? That's my experience. I have also had 13 years of experience in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, untreated. I wouldn't suggest that for anybody. In and out, in and out, in and out, in and out. Staying away from people who carry these around. These books. Oh, you had a big book? Yeah, I don't want to talk to that guy. They told me in detox and rehab, and they probably told you the same thing. Go out and find a sponsor. My brain is messed up. I'm going to go find a sponsor. What does that even mean? That's terrible advice. If you think about it, the same mind that went into detox is going to come out and find a sponsor? We're supposed to find you. That's what the book says. When approached by someone with whom the problem had been solved. That's what the book says. Not we sat at a meeting and shared a good share and hoped somebody came up to us afterwards and asked them to sponsor us. That's not what it said. The book says we approach people. We go back into hospitals. We go back into institutions. We catch them when they're bouncing off the bottom. And what do we offer them? A solution. Some hope. There is hope. You're still breathing in and out? Good. You got a chance to live. You're still breathing in and out. You've got a chance. Right? And then they'll go to a meeting and listen to someone share about their dog barking till 3 a.m. And their electric bill and inflation. And like, why do we do that to the newcomer? It's so confusing. I'm going to go into AA for some hope, and I leave out of here knowing that Mary spends $45 a month on her electric bill. Like, what are we talking about? To carry the message. That's what the step says. Step 12. Carry the message to other alcoholics. That's what it tells me to do. And what's the message? Is it my message? No. The message. Here. Right? So as we read a little bit more, it says, if these thoughts occur, they are hazy and rarely supplanted by the threadbare idea that we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. The alcoholic may say to himself in the most casual way, it won't burn me this time. Here's how. Or perhaps he doesn't think at all. Bingo, bingo. How often have some of us begun to drink in this nonchalant way, and after the third or fourth pounded on the bar and said to ourselves, for God's sake, how did I ever get started again? Only to have that thought supplanted by, well, I'll stop with my sixth drink, or what's the use anyhow? When this sort of thinking is fully established in an individual with alcoholic tendencies, he has probably placed himself beyond human aid, and unless locked up, may die or go permanently insane. Placed himself beyond human aid. Right? What are some examples of human aid? Therapy, counseling, right? Whether that's relationship counseling, relationship, whatever, any human being, right? My kids, my wife, my psychiatrist, my boss, my sponsor, me, placed beyond human aid. Are there people out there that can help people like us? Absolutely. The book says it on page 133 that doctors, therapists are indispensable to the newcomer in their case afterward. Right? It tells me that God put people like that on this earth to help people like us. Great. But the message that it tells me in the book that can carry the newcomer is a message of depth and weight. And it's got to come from somebody who knows what they're talking about. Unfortunately, not every drug and alcohol counselor out there is a real alcoholic. I can explain with anybody who's built like me exactly what it's like to, or what it feels like to be alcoholic. My story might be different than yours. I might have different consequences or not as many. Or we might have drank different things. Or we might have, whatever the case might be. We might have grew up in different places. None of that matters. What it feels like to be alcoholic, that is a message of depth and weight. That's what we can carry to the newcomer. I know what it feels like to feel the way you feel right now. If we said that to, imagine every newcomer that comes in, they sit down and we're like, hey, I know how it feels to feel the way you're feeling. You interested in not feeling that way anymore? Yeah? All right, cool. Come with me. You want a cup of coffee? You hungry? Let's go talk about a couple of things. Right? Let's talk about the first three steps. Right? You don't even have to present it that way. You can talk to them about the first three steps without saying we're talking about the first three steps. Powerless over alcohol. Does that make sense? Yeah, that makes sense. Every time you tried to stop, you couldn't, right? Every time you put one in, you know how many you were going to take? Yeah, that's me. Okay, cool. Unmanageability. That's an internal condition. Right? You have utter inability to manage your emotional states. Does that sound familiar? Yeah, what do you mean by that? Well, every time something good happens, you're through the roof. And every time something bad happens, you're in a deep, dark depression. That's why a lot of us get misdiagnosed with bipolar disorder, right? But the point would be that we can't regulate or control our emotional states. That's unmanageability in the first step. Second step, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. We did that for years with alcohol. Capital P in that step as well. Right, the P capitalized implies so Bill used three different reference books to write this to write the big book. He used the Bible, he used the dictionary he got when he went to law school, and he used a book by Emmett Fox called Sermon on the Mount. If you get a chance to read that book, it's pretty awesome. It breaks down the Lord's Prayer towards the end. It's an excellent, excellent read. Emmett Fox, non-alcoholic, part of a new thought movement back in the day. Bill and Bob, when they were both in New York, would go see him speak on Friday nights at the Hippodrome. But he, incredible dude. The last sentence in the foreword to that book says, any words that are capitalized imply God. And you'll notice that throughout the big book as well. Bill Wilson's story, when he talks about men jumping off the towers of high finance is capitalized because that was Bill's God at that time. That was his higher power at that time. Throughout the entire book, it talks about creative intelligence, right? They're all capitalized. He talks about a new director, right? A new employer, all capitalized. He's talking about God in those scenarios. But he's playing it in a way where it's like, well, you might not be able to understand creative intelligence, but can you understand director? Can you understand employer? He's laying it out for everyone to be like, oh, you know what? I like that concept. I'll go with that. Cool. Right? So he's laying a blanket kind of across the idea of God in these scenarios. So that's, and again, you'll see it as we go through the book over and over again. Obviously, the word God will be capitalized. But place himself beyond human aid. These stark and ugly facts have been confirmed by legions of alcoholics throughout history. But for the grace of God, there have been thousands more convincing demonstrations. So many want to stop, but cannot. Now, the interesting sentence here is, right, there have been many more thousands more convincing demonstrations. Not speaking engagements. Not, you know, demonstration is action. Is doing something to demonstrate this. What are we doing to demonstrate hope in Alcoholics Anonymous? And maybe instead of just talking about it. My sponsor says it all the time. It's look at me square in the eyes. Let's not talk about it. Let's be about it. What are we actually doing to demonstrate hope in AA? It's one thing to talk and discuss it. That's good. Very helpful. Gets people's ears kind of tuned in a little bit. But when they see someone's life change, when they see the way that that person changes their and change the way they react to the world, that is massive, right? Even people who are not like us. When my wife, when I was very early on, she said, "There's something going on with you. I need to know what it is." Well, I don't know what it is you're doing, but I need it too. Like that's the way she presented this to me. Not because I'm begging her to do the 12 steps. Not because I'm begging her or whatever. She saw something different in me. How hopeful is that? I mean, really, people that are not even built the same way I am are like, well, I don't know what is going on with you. I got to know what it is. And then we'll come into AA and we'll just keep it quiet. I don't want to scare the newcomer by talking about God. Like, what do you mean? Scare the newcomer? If they're going to be scared away by a conversation about God or higher power or whatever, like they probably just came from a pretty sordid street corner somewhere. That's a scary place. Life is cheap out there, right? And who knows what kind of medications they were taking with alcohol, and they weren't scared of that. Driving 95 on the freeway to make sure they got to the liquor store on time before it closes. They weren't scared of that. And all of a sudden we come in here like, oh, I don't want to scare the newcomer talking about God. If they leave here because they say they heard the word God, they were leaving here anyway. They're just looking for an excuse. Right? If the pain is bad enough, right? And we can tell the newcomer, like, listen, that your pain level is here. It can only get worse. We can level it off here by doing a couple different things. Let me tell you what it is that I did, and then let me show you what it is that I did. Right? Talking about an inventory or having someone write an inventory in front of the sponsor, that's a demonstration. Right? Because I know a little bit about this thing. Let's discuss resentments. Let's discuss fear and how it's attached to all of our resentments. Let's talk about a fear list. Let's discuss sex conduct. Right? Let's discuss those people that we hurt, that we know we hurt. Right? Let's talk about the money that we owe. Let's talk about the creditors that keep blowing up our phone. Right? Let's talk about those things. Let's bring it out into the damn light, because it ain't doing any good up here by itself. No good. Big promise, in italics, there is a solution. I always chuckle at this. Almost none of us liked the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which a process requires for successful consummation. Right? Almost none of us liked it. I don't even know if he wanted it. He probably wanted to put none of us liked it, but he had to put almost, right? Almost none of us liked the self-searching, leveling of our pride, and confession of shortcomings, right? That's the bulk of the step work. If you think about it, leveling, so self-searching, fourth step, right? Leveling of our pride and confession of our shortcomings, that's all the way up through step 9. Right? So that little sentence right there says that none of us really like this, but guess what it is? It's required. Requires, as it tells me, for its successful consummation. Imagine they left the word successful out. Oh, it's required for successful. Like, this is like the deal. The deal is this. None of us liked it, but I had no other choice. If I could have borrowed another $20, I might not be sitting here today. That's the truth. I had no other choice. The day I came home and my wife had my bags packed for me, my insurance card sitting on the top, and said, "You can't stay here." My first question to her was, "Where are the kids? I want to say goodbye to them." She said, "I don't want them seeing you like this. You're not..." I'm getting chills. She said, "You're not seeing your kids." And then here's how sick my brain was. My thought was, I could go down... I lived outside of Philadelphia. I could go down to this area in Philly called Kensington. Anyone who's familiar with that. I could go live down there in an abandoned house for a little while. That was my first thought. Second thought was a question. I basically begged her to drive me to rehab. So then I get there, and I decide to call my sponsor. Like any good sponsee, I always call after, right? Mm-hmm. That's when he told me to break out the big book and read it with a newcomer. And I said, "Well, I don't even know if I have the book. I didn't pack my bag." Of course, I go into the top of my bag, a pristine, untouched big book. My wife packed it for me, right on top, sitting right there. Untouched, crispy. Like you open it up and it's like, like that's how new, brand new. My sponsor said, why don't you read the doctor's opinion with someone in there? And I said, "Chris, like I'm not even actually really sober. Like, how am I going to help anybody?" And he said, this is the way my sponsor talks to me. And it resonates with me for some reason. Maybe it's because the way my dad talked to me. But he said, "Maybe you'll learn something, stupid." Oh, novel idea. Here I am thinking I'm going to run around and save the world, and I might actually have to just learn something first. Right? So I took a couple people hostage for a few days, and then he slid me the notebook, and I wrote the inventory that day. It was 23 days sober at that time. Wrote the inventory that day, and we discussed the inventory on the spot. I took an hour, like the big book asked me to. By the way, that's the only timestamp in the big book. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Right? It's 1 hour after the fifth step. Anything outside of that is pedal down. Let's get this thing done, right? So after that, right, I sat with him again and we discussed a couple things, right? We discussed my shortcomings, my defects of character, and how I can't remove those. Maybe you ever hear somebody say that? I'm working on my shortcomings. Like, all right, God, good for you, buddy. I can't do that. I'm not built that way. If I could fix my shortcomings, I wouldn't be here. I can't do that. I don't have the ability to do so. I wish I did. All we've got to do, there's this nice little book called Drop the Rock, if you get a chance to read it. It's literally about step 6 and 7. Where all these things that I've collected on my inventory, this rock, as they call it, that I've been carrying around for years, weighing me down. Here's all I have to do. God, remove this from me. Save me from me. That's my little quick prayer, by the way. God, save me from me so I can help you. Right? That's like a third step prayer, kind of condensed into a couple sentences that I can easily remember because I'm a little bit of a rockhead, right? So, God, save me from me so I can help you. Please take this from me. I know you're not going to take all of them all at once. That's absurd. Because imagine if God removed all my shortcomings and defects of character in one shot, right at step 7. I wouldn't have to help other alcoholics. The fact of the matter is, my shortcomings are the best thing that ever happened to the newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because without my shortcomings today, I don't need to help the newcomer. The fact that I have shortcomings is an absolute blessing. Thank God I'm not perfect. Because I have never felt the same feeling I've ever felt sitting in front of the newcomer, watching the light bulb come on them going, wow, I'm the problem. That's my favorite moment of all time. On an inventory, watching a newcomer tilt their head like a puppy who's hearing something. And they say, oh, I'm the problem. Bingo. Ding, ding, ding. Now you're the big winner, by the way. Right? You're the big winner. Here's what you get to do. Here's your prize for being the big winner. You get to be the highest rung of the spiritual ladder. Servant. You get to serve God the rest of your days. That doesn't sound so great. When you can watch that light come on with somebody else, there's no better feeling. Maybe there's one better feeling. Watching that person whose light came on, go do that for somebody else. That's the stuff. That's it. That's the reason I'm alive today. Thank God He saw fit to have me breathing in and out. Just long enough. Luckily enough, there's enough cracks in the dome so the light could get in. And my sponsor was honest enough with me to get through. He was so brutally honest with me. How's that working for you? One of his favorite sentences for me. I try to do this, and I'm going to do that, and I'm talking to so-and-so, and I'm up, 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 up. How's that working for you? It ain't working out all that great. Where's God in all this? Oh, and by the way, who are you helping and what are you reading? He always hits me with those. Who are you helping? And what are you reading? What are you putting inside that dense skull of yours to change your mindset? The big book is sufficient. It's a great start. There's so much good literature out there. I could spend an entire hour listing off all of the books that changed my whole life and perspective. When I first came in, I'm not a reader. I don't really like reading all that much. My sponsor was like, yeah, no kidding. You're a little dumb. Right? I mean, because all I had was my own little bubble of experience, and that's all I was really drawing from. That's all I really had. I could fake and sound like I'm doing okay, and I could paint you a good picture, and I could sell you on why I'm doing so well, but he saw right through it every time. He's like, your perception is like looking through a straw. We need to zoom out a little bit. Zoom out, right? So now, here's the sentence that I was talking about before. So, but we saw it really worked in others. But we saw it really worked in others. And we had to come to believe the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. That can be turned into a question to the newcomer. They're sitting down. Hey, little Johnny, just a quick question for you. Do you see the futility in life the way you've been living it? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. When therefore We were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved. There was nothing left for us to pick up the kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. When approached by those with whom the problem had been solved. If we've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, I don't care if you call yourself recovered or not. It doesn't matter. The book tells me to on page 90, paragraph 3, to refer to myself as a recovered alcoholic. But that's just what the book says. Do whatever you want. Call yourself whatever you want. I don't care. The point is, we are supposed to be approaching the newcomer and laying the simple kit of spiritual tools at their feet. Now, let's take a little historical perspective. What time do I go to? 7:30. Okay. Let's take a little bit of historical perspective on this. The kit of spiritual tools, by the way, when this book was written, is this book. Imagine you're, and I talked about this last week, you're on a farm out in Kansas in 1942. You read the article on the Saturday Evening Post. It talks about these alcoholics that aren't drinking anymore. You send three of your hard-earned dollars out because you're alcoholic to this little office in New York. They send you this big old book on big, thick, fat paper. Right? And you're reading through it. It just told me, right? This is the simple kit. So, this book was doing the approaching, right? Landing on their doorstep, sitting at their kitchen table while they were reading it, right? And then the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at their feet was the book. This book was built and designed to have the person sitting at home to do the 12 steps. That's the way it was built and designed. If it didn't work that way, none of us would be here. Because you know somebody out in Kansas got sober somewhere and started running around trying to find other drunks to help because they did what the book said. There's only three steps that deal directly with other people. Steps 5, 9, and 12. Everything else is between you and God. It says in the book that if you think you need somebody else to get sober, you're mistaken. Well, I need my job back in order to get sober. I just need a loan. I just need a good sponsor. I just need a home group. I just need to find this. I just need I. That is a direct contradiction to what the book says. The book says you don't necessarily need anybody. Is it good to have a sponsor guide you through this process? Yeah, it'll make it a lot easier. Plus, we're all over the place. Right? Come into a big book meeting. You find someone carrying around one of these that has half a brain that might know what they're talking about. Perfect. Bingo. You're in. Help me. Right? That's it. If they don't approach you. Right? But the point is, and I wanted to make this point as clear as possible. I can't fix me. You can't fix me. God can fix me. How do I get the clear message from God? I clear out the gunk that is between my head and my heart through an inventory. I learn about my shortcomings, my defects of character. I'm selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and fear-based. And those get scattered out through all of my relationships. What's the one commonality of all my relationships? Me! And when they all suck, it's because of me! Maybe not directly because, but again, we usually start the ball rolling, as the book says. Right? We usually, or we add a little fuel to the fire. We usually do that. Right? Although I don't think so. I think that I'm doing very well, and I would give the shirt off my back to somebody, and I would whatever, you know, I'll hold the door open for someone, like, okay, great. Right? Not bad. Not a bad start. Have you ever had to get a phone call at 1 in the morning from someone that wants to get a ride to detox? It's not convenient. None of this is convenient. And we're dealing with some of the sickest people on planet Earth. Right? And yet, we get to serve them. I'll leave it at this. My mother-in-law asked me recently, I was about to go speak at a meeting, And I was at we were at my mother-in-law's house, and we were all there sitting around. It's a good time, and you know, I get up to start getting ready to go, and as I'm leaving, she taps me on the shoulder and kind of pulls me aside and says, "She's not one of us. She's got a lot of isms, but she's not one of us." And she said, "How long do you have to go to these things?" And I played stupid because I'm good at doing that. I'm like, "Well, what do you mean? What things? Well, these." These meetings, like how long do you have to go to them, right? And I looked at her. Her name is European, and her name is Bojana. And I said, Bojana, I get to go to these. I don't have to go. I get to go. God saw fit for me to have an ability to run my mouth and study a book and carry a message. God saw fit to keep me alive when I had done everything in my power to not be, for a very specific reason. And from what I, up to this point, it could change. He could draw a different play for somebody like me. He could draw a different play for somebody like you at any moment. But what I believe in this moment right now is God saw fit to keep me alive, to carry this message to his sickest kids and let them know that there's hope, that there's an opportunity to get well, not stay sick and sober, but to get well. Right? Contented, happy, joyous, and free recovery. That's what I believe at this moment. Right? And again, if anyone wants to talk after the meeting, I'm here to help. I'm more than happy. If I said something that might not jive with you, I'll point to the spot in the book where it says it. Right? Outside, I try not to share my opinions. Try to keep it in here. This is what we're here to do. This is a book study. So at that, I can open it up. Now we open it up, Brett, for 15 minutes for everybody. Yeah. If you guys want to share, if you have questions, comments, concerns, non-violent disagreements. My man right here handles the violent ones. This is not me. You want me to hit this?
No.
You got it? Thank you.